Welcome to the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School, so listen, learn, enjoy, and share.
Welcome to a very special episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. In recent years, we've welcomed scores of high-profile leaders and business people to this pod, but I'm not certain we've ever had anyone with such a compelling story to tell. Levi Roots is a successful entrepreneur, an award-winning musician, a TV celebrity, and a charismatic man who truly embodies resilience. He became a household name after appearing on the BBC's Dragon's Den, persuading two of the dragons to give him £50,000 for his fiery jerk sauce, then turning that homemade recipe into one of the best-known Caribbean foods in Britain. He has since written multiple cookbooks, launched a restaurant chain, and expanded his product range far beyond the iconic reggae sauce. But Levi was born into poverty in Jamaica and was unable to read or write when he first came to Britain. He even spent time in prison. However, he made a living as a reggae musician and won a prestigious MOBO award. Then that appearance on Dragon's Den changed his life. He now channels his experiences into helping young people find their own path to success. So Levi Roots, thank you very, very much for joining us here on this episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Isn't it not your first trip to Nottingham, is it?
No, not at all. Nottingham plays a huge part in my musical diary when I was a teenager and wanted to break into music. I had a sound system called Sir Coxon Sound System in London, and we used to come to Nottingham and play. As a matter of fact, Nottingham, and I'm not saying this because I'm here, but it was one of our favourite places to come to in the 70s and the early 80s just to play reggae music.
Good memories.
Absolutely fantastic memories.
Now, you're here tonight, completely different, to give a guest lecture at the business school. Now, I believe your lecture is titled Legacy Leadership, which fits very nicely with the title of this podcast. So what are you going to tell your audience?
Well, I have this unbelievable story, you know, that sometime when I pinch myself and I think, well, did I really do that? And when I say that is meaning that to change my life around from somebody who pretty much was, I used to call it, I was the master of non-resourcefulness, meaning that, you know, not to have anything that I actually control at all. Being on the streets of South London, and if somebody like a Peter Jones or anybody of these new...
The dragon, Peter Jones?
The dragons, yes, that I knew. If they'd ever had the audacity to come round to Brixton in those days, they would have seen a young Levi Roots putting my hands up at every opportunity that I could, saying that, hey, I'm over here, I can do something. I can sing, I can write songs, I can play the guitar. I feel like I can do something special. But again, because of the postcode that you live in, it determines that no one like a Peter Jones or your Alan Sugar or your Jamie Oliver or anybody that could have inspired me in those days ever came around to Brixton. So it took me until I was 48 when I went to Dragon's Den to become the best of me.
Were you 48 on Dragon's Den?
I was 48, and that's the time when I became the best of me, and that's what I said, the story is fantastic. Because when you're that age, you're not supposed to be slaying five dragons. but yes, you know, I think it's, you know, one of my heroes is Marcus Garvey, a Jamaican philosopher. And he said that a people without knowledge of their past is like a tree without root. Well, I always had knowledge of my past. And I think that's really what helped me to become the person who I am.
And of course, your past is tied up with the Windrush generation.
Absolutely.
Who came to Britain from the Caribbean in the 50s and the 60s. And we've chatted off air about their resilience. Do you think that their resilience, that entrepreneurial spirit of that generation, do you think that has something to offer the modern business leader?
I think it has everything to do with it. You know, I recall seeing how hard my mom worked, you know, even before I came to the UK. I knew how hard they worked as part of the Windrush generation, who came to the UK to work hard, you know, sometimes three, four jobs at a time because they were on a mission. They had left, especially my parents had left 6 children back in Jamaica. So they didn't come here to mess about or anything. It was here to just really work hard so they could send for their families one at a time to come over. So me knowing the actions that my mom and my father did, you know, when it was time for me to excel myself, I used what I learned from them, that stoicism, the hard work, to be able to help to excel my own self.
And of course, it all really took off for you on Dragon's Den. It's remarkable. And you say you were 48. I'm sorry, people are going to do the maths here, but that was 18 years ago now. I remember as if it was yesterday. And what do you remember about it?
Well, I remember that I sweated a lot. I remember the BBC zooming the camera down on my forehead and the beads, the sweats of beads in my forehead. I could have had a bath in it. But I think the most beautiful thing that I remember is that I was able to be myself. Because I think that's the key in, because I spoke to Peter Jones after, you know, he invested. And I asked him, I said, Peter, why did you invest in me? You don't look like someone that would ever invest in a Rastaman from Brixton with a sauce called Reggie sauce. Bearing in mind that Peter couldn't even pronounce reggae at the time when we met. But I asked him, why did he invest in the sauce? And he said he never invested in the sauce. He invested in me, in Levi Roots, and in the personality that I came across with. And I said to him that's me. You know, do I need to change to carry your name, as now you've given me the money and you're going to be my mentor and help me to bring this, my grandmother's sauce, to the supermarket? And he said, no, I invested in you. It's who you are that makes you investable. And I have taken that away. And now when I talk to kids, I tell them the same thing. I says, be you. But the key thing is to become the best of you. Because just being you is not good enough. You have to become the best of you. And sometimes that takes a lot of mentoring to be able to get to that point.
And do you think people, young people, are reluctant to be authentic now?
I think years ago they did. I think now, especially with the influx of social media and now children are more savvy about who they are, I think that lesson now is taught to them that it's easier when you're you. It's more difficult when you pretend to be someone else. I mean, I remember when the BBC asked me to come on the show. And, you know, for me, it was not trying to go on Dragon's Den and speak like Prince Charles or something like that. It was going as Levi Roots, you know, the Rastaman that sings a little bit, cooks a little bit, but, you know, it's just being himself totally. And I think young people now, with the way business are on social media and being able to express themselves through the camera and through the medium, I think it's a time when young people are doing what I did 20 years ago, and it's being their authentic selves.
And I sat and watched it yesterday, and I think that the Dragons are much kinder now. They were quite tough with you. I mean, they give you £50,000, but my goodness, they took 40% of your business off you. I mean, you were very gracious about it. It strikes me that they may have been impressed by you standing your ground too as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think, you know, with investors, they never want to give their money away, to be truthful, you know, about that. And they've got to trust that person who is in front of them that they will be investing their money in. And you know, for Peter invested in me, I think that he saw the opportunity that this wasn't going to be about the sauce. This is going to be about who sells the sauce. And again, I say to people that investor always will invest in people first, you know, because the product cannot sell itself. And I think that was the reasons why I got the investment from him.
One of the interesting lines I remember reading afterwards is that the other investor, Richard Farley, correct me if I'm wrong on this, he sold out after a year made 10 times what he had originally invested.
He did. But again, with the difference with Richard Farley and Peter, Richard invested in the sauce. Because I think 18 months after, you know, when the sauce was for sale in literally every supermarket in the country, I think it was right for him to see that there was an opportunity. Perhaps, you know, he never had the vision as Peter did, that this is not going to be about 18 months after Dragon's Den. this is going to be about, you know, years and years to come. So Richard wanted to sell his shares. You know, I think it was fair of him because, you know, it's a good thing that we had made enough money at the time for me to buy back the shares from him. And it was just a fantastic thing to do. But I've spoken to Richard many a times, and he's gone on record and said it is one of his best investment that he ever
had. Certain it was.
Because, you know, he invested $25,000, which is like a lunch break to him. And within 18 months, I had to pay him $250,000 for my 20%
I'm sure he's still a good friend of yours.
He's a very good friend of mine, very good friend.
So, but it's interesting, you've explained what they were investing, what they were getting from you. But, you know, beyond the investment, how did your partnership with them, with such high-profile business leaders, how did that change your leadership approach, your approach to life?
Absolutely changed my leadership approach because I recognized that I wasn't doing this for me only. Yes, you know, I wanted to be better and be able to feed my kids better, and that's one thing. But I think the bigger picture was about Caribbean food. And I think I had to notice that I have a bigger job to do because this wasn't just about me and my sauce in my house. This was now given a chance for Caribbean cuisine to get into supermarkets and to have someone who is actually up there with a mainstream brand so that others can be able to come on board. And now, 20 years later, when you walk outside of your house now, it's not too difficult to find a Caribbean restaurant. When you go into a supermarket, it's not too difficult to find Caribbean product. And it was because of, you know, I remember when I was on Dragon's Den, it was like that moment, you know, and young people won't remember this, but perhaps you will, when Rudolph Walker was on Love Thy Neighbor back in the days. And every time someone black was on television, people would be ringing around and say, oh, Lord of mercy, look on the TV, there's a black person on the TV. In 2007, when I was on, it was the same thing that was happening to the Caribbean community. People was just so excited that, you know, there was this Rastaman that was on Dragon's Den, and he didn't look like he was going to lose. He looked like he may win, and I did win.
And you did, you did. I mean, your brand is, in business terms, is diversified into more than, I think, 50 products, soft drinks, cakes, jams, ready meals. Was that, did you have that idea in your head in the beginning, or was it something that just emerged?
Well, I went to see my mum just before I went on to Dragon's Den. It was at the time when I was telling my friends that, look, I've been asked to go on this show and I feel like I want to take my guitar. And they said to me, no, Levi, whatever you do, don't take that guitar. You know, I said to them that I want to put the image of a Rastaman on the bottle with the colors of Rastafari, which is green, gold and red, and of my culture. Nobody would have it. You know, everybody said to me, don't do that. I should go the way that everybody else had done. The only person that gave me some words of encouragement was my mom, because she was of Windrush and she knew about being who you are. And she said to me, don't undermine who I was by comparing myself with anyone else. She said, it's because I was different why I was special. And I should never set my goals by what other people deem important, because one day I'm going to become the best of me. And she said that if I take those words to Dragon's Den, I will come back as a dragon slayer. And I tell you what, I was just thinking, wow, mom, that's like some lyrics there. You know, you'll come back as a dragon slayer.
Write this down. Yeah, write this down.
Absolutely. So it was an inspired moment, you know, for me. It was such a strange set of things that was happening around those times in Dragon's Den.
Because I think I read about how you were actually, how you were scouted for Dragon's Den. Tell us about that.
Well, yes, absolutely. Well, when the sauce failed in my local Brixton, because I had forgotten that everybody else in Brixton were Caribbean and they made their own sauces. So it failed big time. Yeah, people were saying to me, Levi, don't sell us any of your sauces because we can make our own sauces. And I used to go back home every day to my children with the bag on my back full of sauces that never sold. And my son threw a dart at the map that we had at our house, and it landed in a place called Carmarthenshire in Wales. And we just thought to myself, okay, I'm going to go to anywhere in the UK that had Shire at the end of it. because there's no black man with a guitar jumping out at me singing a song called Reggae Picket Sauce in these areas.
This is all a bit surreal.
Absolutely. And it was going to the Shires. I think it was about a year or so that I never sold it locally. I just went to these lovely country markets, you know, where the mainstream market was, because I knew that people that came to the carnival, because I did the carnival every year. And my, you know, my customers that came to my stall at the carnival were mainstream people. So nobody has a right to a market. You have to go out and find your own market. And that was my mistake. I thought I had a ready-made market in my local Brixton. But as I said, people make their own sauces. So I went into the Shires where that, you know, I could express my Caribbeanism. You know, I can tell my story of my grandmother. I can tell my Rastafari stories and sing my Bob Marley songs. And I think people found it. And it's while I was there in the Shires that I attracted some producer from the Dragon's Den who was in the audience that saw me singing the song, and she was the one that gave me a business card.
Of course, the producers from the Dragon's Den don't come into Brixton.
Absolutely, so they're in the Shires, yeah.
You had to go to them.
Absolutely, absolutely. As I said, nobody has a right to a market, and I think that's something that, you know, small to medium enterprise need to think about. You have to go out and build or find your own market.
So now we're going to take a quick break from our chat to mention the MBA programs at Nottingham Business School. As we've learned from many of our guests, effective business leadership is about confidence, adaptability, and thinking strategically. These are the key ingredients to delivering innovation and impact in crowded competitive markets. So if you are ready to transform your career, visit ntu.ac.uk/MBA. to explore the MBA programs at Nottingham Business School. We're one of only 1% of business schools worldwide who hold the prestigious Triple Crown accreditation. That's ntu.ac.uk/MBA to find out more. Now back to the show.
You have spoken openly about your upbringing in Jamaica and in Brixton. So how did those experiences, being unable to read or write until the age of 11, when you got here, spending some time in prison, how did all that shape your self-belief and your, I don't know, ability to come back from adversity?
I suppose as a young man, I was always looking for a mentor. You know, I see that now because I wasn't a leader when I was young, because I came from Jamaica, unable to even spell my first name, which only had 5 letters in it. It was that bad. And it was at the time when rife racism was running through the country. I was 11 or 12, and yet when I came out of school and I turned right, you know, there was these skinhead type fascist kids that wanted to rip my head off. And they were only 12 ages like myself. But yet when I turned left, there was another amazing set of English people that wanted to embrace me and hear stories about Jamaica and the Caribbean. They loved reggae music. They loved ska music. And I was realizing that there was 2 parts of this UK that I needed to embed myself with and find a medium so I can still be here and function with that. So I became a bit of a follower. And I think it was me always looking for someone to mentor me, like how Peter has mentored me now, and I can be myself and excel at my best. So being a follower led me through all kind of troubles, you know, including spending my time when I was in prison. But it was there that that finding of myself actually happened, because I met my first mentor while I was there. Her name was Teresa. And she was a drama teacher that came into the prison twice a week and really teach, you know, young people that was in prison about drama. And she took me underneath her wings, basically. And I remember she saying to me one day that you're not Keith, which is my real name that my father had given me.
Oh, yes, sorry. Your real name's Keith Valentine, isn't it? Yes, yes, yes.
She says, you're not Keith. Because I used to look in the mirror when I found out that Keith Valentine Graham was a Scottish name. And I kept looking in the mirror and thinking that I don't look bloody Scottish. Something's happening here. And it was Teresa, my first mentor, you know, that kind of explained to me that I'd need to be Levi Roots. you know, the young man that loved his music and loved his grandmother and tells stories of his grandmother about her cooking, and the young Rasta man. And she was the one that really embedded that thought into myself that I need to change from being this follower of Keith that went everywhere with his friends and did all the bad things because you wanted to be cool. Because if you can't do the curriculum in those days in the 70s when I came over, you go the other way. And of course, with me lacking in the curriculum, I went everywhere the other kids taught me. But when Teresa says, be you, be yourself, then it was that time for me to change. And I came out, and those words nestled in my head. She taught me Shakespeare. You know, one of the first Shakespeare she taught me was of Brutus, that said, there's a tide in the affairs of man, taking up the floods will lead to fortune. Omitted, all the days of your lives could be deemed in shallows and in miseries, but on such a full sea are we now afloat, and we must take the current when it serves or lose our ventures. Now, what Brutus was talking about, that you have to take your chance when it comes. That's why it says, take the current when it serves at the high tide. Otherwise, you will never get off your desert island.
Take your chance and look for a mentor.
And I was always in search of somebody who could help me to become the better person. And it was taking Teresa's words and her teaching. But yet, when I met Peter, now I knew I'd found somebody who would actually finish off the work that she had done and believed in me, not today and tomorrow, but be with me from the moment we met. And now we're into our 21 years since we met, Peter and I.
Yes, yeah. I mean, you really haven't looked back, have you? I mean, I've been watching some of your many, many TV appearances. I think I watched something from The Apprentice. I watched you coming second on Celebrity Mastermind.
Absolutely.
I saw you just last year in the Big Brother house. And as I say, I even saw you in an episode of Death in Paradise, which was fantastic. I mean, how important is it, as I mean, you've sort of expressed this already, but that idea of young people, young business people embracing their unique personality rather than trying to fit into some kind of conventional mold.
Yeah, it's, I think the key thing is to find who you are. You know, now, you know, I am chief ambassador of the new museum, you know, the National Windrush.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. For me, it was thinking that my mom had done over 50 years working in the NHS here. She came over as part of the Windrush generation in the 60s, and she was a nurse. She worked in King's College Hospital for many, many years, saving many lives and doing all the fantastic thing that you did then with a national institution that we have here. But I just thought, maybe 5 years ago, I thought that my mother's story has never been told. You know, she was part of the, you know, that generation that helped to make this country great. But yet, whenever time I think of British history and where black people fits into that, it's always about slavery. You know, and I thought that there are some fantastic people of the Windrush generation, you know, that helped to build this country. Their stories needed to be told. And it was that inspiration of getting my mom's story in a museum. Not just talking about it, but as you know, when it comes to history, if it's not in a museum, then young people cannot connect with it. Because a museum is where you go to learn about history and about, you know, who inspires you in that kind of way. So I got together with a few friends of mine, and we decided to work on the National Windrush Museum. I spoke to the king many years ago, and the first thing that we did was to erect a monument in Waterloo Station. And the prince, you know, was
he was there. He was the prince then, now he's the king.
Yes. Absolutely. And the next thing I spoke to him about was to do a museum, and he said to me, that's the next step.
He's
very receptive. He's a great man. And I went to see Paddy Rogers, who is the chief of the Royal Maritime Museum.
Right.
And of course, you know, Maritime Museum is one of the best museums in the country. And it's also about travel by sea. So it was a perfect relationship to have
the Windrush coming over,
because Windrush is about traveling by sea also. So Paddy, you know, it was just a great friendship that we broke up and we brokered, and Paddy gave us the go ahead to have the National Windrush Museum inside of the Maritime, which was just like the most fantastic thing that we could have. We opened a few weeks ago with our first kind of opening of it. And it's really just to change the narrative of what British history is about. Because The Windrush generation is part of that. My mother's story and others, you know, people that fought in the Second World War, that their story has never been told. And since that time, I've met so many soldiers, old soldiers who are in their 90s and 90 plus, who was here since then and fought for this country in his hard time. Their story was never been told. So I think that's what the National Windrush Museum is about, is to tell this story of not Caribbean history, but it's also a part of British history as well.
You see yourself as a great ambassador for all this. Is that your life's work now?
I don't know about ambassador, you know. I think for me, I'm just doing what I'm passionate about. You know, anything that I think that can enhance young people's minds, because I knew it was young people that were buying into the sauce and buying into the Levi Roots product when I came on the scene. And I felt a duty that I wanted to give back to them in whatever way I can with their education. And that's why now when I look at my diary, you know, it's full of schools, universities, prisons, wherever there is young people, I feel it's a duty for me to get back there and tell this story and try to inspire them.
Great stuff. So if you had one final boiling down of your life story to a single piece of leadership advice for young entrepreneurs, perhaps not in business school, starting their career today, what might that be?
Well, I said it earlier, but I think it's those lines that my mom said that inspired me. You know, it really changed my life when she says, be you, don't undermine yourself. Because I think sometimes, particularly for a certain part of the community, we tend to undermine who we are because there are some people out there saying that we're not good enough. And even though we shouldn't be listening, but sometimes those words affect us, you know, especially young people that don't have the strength like you and I as growing up to, you know, to swat away some of those negativity. So they swallow some of that hope and go deeper, even deeper within themselves. So that word of not undermining who you are because you are special. Every child is different. Which is, that's what makes you special, because you're different. You are unique and different within yourself. So I think those are the words that I would say to young people. Don't undermine who you are by comparison with anybody else. It's because you are different why each and every one of us is special.
Fantastic way to end. Levi Roots, thanks very, very much for joining us here on this episode of the Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with Levi Roots, why not listen to previous episodes with the CEO of global tech company IdeaGen, Ben Dawkes, award-winning social entrepreneur Dr. Marcellus Baz, MBE, or the co-founder of the amazing IF company, Sarah Ellis. This episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast was produced by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.